Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
I'm looking around the corner past you, not at you. So, hello everybody. I'm Sean Reynolds. I am the Community Relations Coordinator for Montecook Games. You may have known me from my days at Paizo as a designer, or my days at Wizards as a designer. Now I am in charge of our social media, and I run our ASSA team, which are volunteers who run our games at conventions and stores. I'm also in charge of organized play and a bunch of other things. We all wear many hats at MCG. But I'm here to talk about what's coming up with Montecook Games, and about half of this is just going to be me blabbing about things, and then the other half will be you guys asking questions, and I will try to not spoil too much. So, first of all, I have a copy of Predation to show off. This comes out next month. Who here is not familiar with Predation? Okay, so, a year and a half ago, we had a Kickstarter called Worlds of the Cypher System, and the point of that was to do three different standalone campaign setting books for the Cypher System. The first one was Gods of the Fall last year. This is Predation, and the premise of Predation is about 100 years from now, scientists develop time travel technology, and they use it to go back in time to the Cretaceous time period to study dinosaurs. They bring back around 5,000 people because they need to like build a camp and fortify it because, hey, there's dinosaurs that are attacking. Their time travel stuff stops working, and they're stranded, and they know the meteor is coming. So they just start doing whatever they can to plan to survive the global extinction event. So people are scavenging the last bits of their technology into armor and weapons. People are weaponizing dinosaurs and turning into like domesticated animals. Some people are splicing their own DNA with dinosaur DNA so that they can hopefully survive the mass extinction that occurs in the Cretaceous period. One of the novel things we're doing in Predation is that every character has a dinosaur companion. And one of the fun things is that, and Chris was a playtester, so he will probably have comments about this, that you have your dinosaur companion, and it has its own character sheet, but another person in the party plays your dinosaur companion. So it's like, okay, little T-Rex, go bite that guy, and you can be like, make a roll, and if you make the roll, then Bob's like, okay, cool, arr! Or Bob can be like, no, you're stupid, I'm going to run off here and do my own thing. So we introduce some new character types, and obviously some new foci. And it's fun. I'll let you guys flip through. The art's great. I was improving some of the art website, which is an article about playtesting. The next big release that we have coming up is for No Thank You Evil.
What's it called?
No Thank You Evil. So we made this game called No Thank You Evil. It takes the Cypher system, which is the same rule system that we used for Numenera and Strange. We squished it down and simplified it and made it something that ages 5 and up can play. It's a big, brightly colored box set with very kid-friendly art. Inclusive, and the game mechanics scales that you can have a kid who's 5 playing a kid who's 8 playing a kid who's 10 or 12, and the characters kind of naturally progress in complexity depending on the skill and ability of the player. And it's just a fun little lighthearted game. You can play it as a one-off over and over again, but it's an RPG. We describe it as a family game because we don't want to scare them. But it is an RPG. It actually won Best Family Game of the Year at Gen Con last year, and it's up for Origins Awards this year. The main complaint that people have had about No Thank You Evil is that kids want to play it all the time. Parents come home from work, and the kids are like, let's play No Thank You Evil! And just like many GMs say, I haven't had time to think of an adventure, what do I do? So we had a small Kickstarter to create a couple of supplements for that. One of them came out in March. It's called Story Please, and it is a group of 5 decks of cards. It's a person deck, a creature deck, a story deck, a location deck, and so on. So you'd be like, so tonight's adventure is the sheriff says that someone has stolen all the robot waiters from this famous pizza place, and they're stolen by a giant who lives in a nearby abandoned amusement park, and he's got a magical cake that you can eat as much as you want, and you never get sick. That's the adventure. You gotta go get the robots, get the treasure from the giant. That's right. The other side of the I don't have an adventure idea problem we're solving with the upcoming one, which which is called Uh-Oh Monsters. And it's a box set of four complete adventures for No Thank You Evil, plus additional monsters and little cardboard stand-ups like the Pathfinder, Pathfinder Pawns. That comes out. It was supposed to be in June. We had a shipping delay from the printer in China, so it'll be coming out in July. The next big news for Numenera is we have the Jade Colossus book, which is not part of any Kickstarter. I know a lot of people who really tend to back every single Kickstarter we do, and Chris does.
You
sat in the front, even if you did that. Sure enough. But Jade Colossus is a combination of an adventure and a source book, and there's something called a ruins design engine that basically it just puts you generic, random, crazy, weird places to explore for the Numenera setting. Weird does not play Numenera. So, do you not play Numenera because you haven't heard of it, or just because you don't like it?
No, okay.
Fix that. Can I give a 60-second rundown of what Numenera is? All right, so Numenera is the setting that originally created Monte Cook Games. It's what was successful enough. It's the first role-playing game Kickstarter to get $500,000.
How long ago did it start?
4 years ago. It was released 4 years ago. I started working on it 5 years ago. I was the developer for that. That was back, actually, when I was full-time doing design. The premise of Numenera is it's Earth 1 billion years in the future. And it follows Arthur C. Clarke's law. Any science sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. So, Earth 1 billion years from now, 8 great civilizations have arisen on this planet or come to this planet, and they've either gone to colonize other worlds or to explore the dimensions, or they transcend physical form and become energy beings, and Earth has been abandoned, and then other creatures have come and colonized it and repeated the whole cycle. The current point in the setting is about 1,000 years after the 8th civilization left, the people of Earth call their world the 9th world. There's all these old bits of technology left around. But the people who live there now, they kind of have a pseudo-medieval level of technology. So you might have, you know, a village with a blacksmith, and oh, I'm a warrior, I have chainmail and a magic sword. Oh, I'm a wizard, I can control fire and talk to animals, that sort of thing. But underlying all that magic, which everybody just calls Numenera, which is a word for stuff that they don't understand, is actually technology. So your quiet village, when everybody goes to sleep at night, there's rumbling and clanking underground because there's like a terraforming device that's keeping the river clean from pollution. And the people in the village have rumors, oh, there's demons out in the hills. Don't go into the mountains because the demons will get you. They're not demons. They're mining robots from the previous civilization. They've gone haywire because they've been left alone for 1,000 years. The setting is all about exploration and using technology in weird ways. For example, they might be a rumor that those demons in the hills, oh, if you kill a demon, you tear its beating heart out of its chest, it'll give you powers over fire. Yeah, it's because the demons are robots. If you steal a robot's power core, you can rewire it and make it a bomb. That's their explanation for it. The warrior who has a magic sword, that magic sword actually has an AI in it and a gravity altering device, so it detects that it hits flesh and magnifies gravity and hits 3 times as hard. The wizard character who can control fire with his mind, they have nanites in their brain that lets them shoot microwaves. And they have a translation device also that lets them talk to animals. So it's always just a kooky science explanation for what they see. That's Numenera. So the game is all about just exploring all these old weird ruins that are everywhere. Like, it's not having D&D where, oh, there's an adventure 4 days away. Like, the adventure might be literally like outside your door. So Pathfinder has Pathfinder Society, which is their organized play program. We have Cypherplay Numenera, which is part of and the current season is about exploring this weird city. It's just a normal city that happened to have a metal wall or a kind of like a keycard access. And people are like, this is great. You know, monsters can't get in and out, so we can just secure this. And then an earthquake happens, and there's like a door that opens up on the ground. They're like, oh, there's something under our town. We've been living here for 200 years, and there's like machines and things living under there. That's what I'm exploring now. Let's see. There's Invisible Sun. Who has not heard of Invisible Sun? Oh, okay. So, here's a bit of a story. So, I talked about Numenera, and Numenera is weird. We also have another setting called The Strange, which is strange. So, yeah, the show Sliders that was out in the 80s and 90s, where Hop and Trolley's alternate dimensions. The Strange is kind of like that, and that there's Earth, it's the modern day, and there's all these little demiplanes associated with it called recursions. But these recursions are created and sustained by the power of human unconsciousness, and they're inspired by myths and mythology. So there's a recursion where like these were kind of Sumerian, Babylonian gods are still in charge of this region of Earth. But it's only, you know, a few hundred square miles. There's a recursion that has these weird cyborgs that are actually from another planet that kind of like got stuck onto our planet, or this recursion of it. You get weird things like there's a recursion that's basically Star Wars. There's a recursion that's anything that's inspired by fiction that you want. You can have a Dresden Files adventure. You could have a Star Trek recursion. Who here has played a D&D game or a Pathfinder game where the GM has come up with a really cool plot that's based on some obscure book or obscure TV show, and then one other person in the group has seen that show, and then they just spoil it for you. Like, oh yeah, this is like episode 52 of Doctor Who. With The Strange, you could be like, yeah, you know what? We're going to have a lot of spoilers for Star Trek stuff because the next campaign we're doing is we're going in and out of the Star Trek recursion. You're about hopping in and out of recursions, stealing artifacts and using them to like block other factions who are trying to control recursions. Some of the people in these recursions become aware that they are not from the real reality and they're trying to get to Earth. There's a problem where there's a Sherlock Holmes-based recursion where Sherlock Holmes is a real person and Moriarty is a real person, and he's aware that there's a real Earth and he's trying to get to that. And so you're kind of trying to prevent him. One of the neat things about The Strange is that when your character jumps to these recursions, depending on how it's done, you can do this thing called translation, where your character adapts to fit into the setting. So if you translate to the recursion where King Arthur's Camelot still exists, and say you're like, I'm Chris, I'm in the Marine Corps, and I've got a rifle. And you translate to King Arthur's court, and you're like, and now I'm wearing armor, and I have a sword, and I know how to use it. I still know I'm Chris from Detroit, but I'm also Sir Chris, who's, you know, gone through some questing. This allows for some really crazy things, because we have a book that has a much weirder recursion. There's one that's based on Watership Down. So when you translate to this, you're a rabbit. You're running around, but you still know you're Hugh. One of the recursions, and because any sort of fiction is a viable option for recursions, so there's a lot of alternative history. There's a recursion where the Nazis won World War II, and they're still in charge. Some of them, the leaders are aware that they're in recursion. Some of them have escaped into other recursions that are kind of like taking over. So in the Watership Down recursion, over the next hill, there's a little valley full of rabbits, and those rabbits have been infiltrated by Nazi rabbits. So, Numenera is weird. The Strange is strange. And Invisible Sun is this next game that we're doing. It is surreal. If you've ever seen any like album artwork from the 1970s or even just like crazy speculative science fiction where like there's the hero wandering through the desert and there's like a hand coming up out of the ground with a city on it. That's a thing in Invisible Sun. It's just bizarre. Like we've had an adventure where we needed to rescue somebody who had been kidnapped, and the enemy's castle actually existed in a candle flame in a monastery. So we had to go to the monastery. They had a room full of candles. We're like, which one is it? And my character had a reveal the truth sort of spell. We saw there was a demon like lurking in this one particular candle. We're like, okay, you know the password to jump into that candle. You end up in his, so he's basically in his own little demi plane doing all this stuff. There's so much weirdness in Invisible Sun that we have, Monty did a talk about this at Gen Con, but the video of it is up on our YouTube channel. He talks for an hour and a half about how this setting is, it's just really out there. And one of the things that we really embrace this for Invisible Sun is that there's a lot of gameplay that you can do that's not at the table. There's the active mode where you're either like talking to NPCs and interacting with the rest of the group, or perhaps the combat. There's a lot of stuff of, hey, I've got this little side interest that I wanted for my character. Like my character has a romantic relationship with this NPC, or I want to do some spell research, or I want to build something, or I need to follow up on what happened to my missing brother. So a lot of the games handle what's called development mode, where it's offline, it's away from the table, and you either like text the GM. And a lot of games allow you to do this and encourage you to do this, but this is actually one of the first games where it's just integrated into the setting, where you understand, yes, I'm going to be having these little side trip adventures that don't necessarily relate to the rest of anybody else. And you can do weird things like, if we got to that Candleflame Palace issue and we didn't know what the password was, one of the characters could break for the night, and one of the other players could say, hey, GM, my mentor wizard used to study with this person that we are trying to infiltrate. Maybe when I was an apprentice, I could have read a book about how these sort of flame doorway portal things work. And so you kind of have this little side scene. And then you come back to the game the next time, and your character's like, aha, I know how to do this. And I was like, oh, I'm studying. And you can make up the backstory issue. Now, the weird thing about Invisible Sun, one of the other weird things about Invisible Sun, is that the premise is that all the player characters actually come from a realm called Shadow, which is our world. Like this, you're at PaizoCon right now, this is all fake. Earth is fake. It's a realm, a world, a dimension called the Gray. The Gray is the realm of illusions and deceit and lies. Because there's actually a city called Saturnine, Indigo, which is the realm of truth, and there was a great war that happened there. And the player characters are all a type of wizard called Vislay. And thousands of Vislay fled the war by hiding in Shadow. And they hid so well in Shadow that they started to believe that Shadow was real. So all your characters are people who've been living lives in Shadow, and suddenly they realize, wait, this is not the real world. It's very much like The Matrix. But the weird thing about one of the weird things about this is that, unlike a game of Pathfinder or Mage or whatever, if you're ever in a situation where one player can't make it to the table that week, Shadow is very, very alluring, and it just your character could just vanish back to Shadow because you spent years hiding in Shadow. Like, where's Bruce's character? Can't find him. Use the detection spell. Oh, he's in Shadow. Crap. Well, we're going to finish this part of the plot, and then next week, hopefully he'll have returned from Shadow. So my character, for example, was a college student. He was in a rock band. Again, in Shadow, so it's all fake. And then suddenly he was drawn out of Shadow by this group of other Vislay called the Hendasa. Their whole thing is they go to Shadow, find Vislay, got stuck in Shadow, and extract them and say, hey, wake up, this is not the real world. Now this is real. And you can have weird, crazy plot elements related to this. For example, my character has a brother who was also trapped in Shadow with him. But coming back to Indigo, to the actuality where outside of Shadow, no one else knows that his brother exists. And I'm like, I had a brother. I have all these memories of him. People are like, no, that's just Shadow. That was a dream. That was fake. It's like, no, I have this magic item that he had. This is his. I know he exists. I have one friend who's like, I believe you, buddy. But everyone else was like, no, it's not true. But one of the character arcs I picked for myself is that I wanted to uncover a mystery. And I one of the things I discovered over the course of this early part of this campaign is that some people get so deeply embedded in Shadow that they can't be extracted. They kind of end up on like the flip side of Shadow. Because each realm kind of has two different aspects. I'm getting really, really meta in the grass here. But if the idea is that the realm of Shadow is the realm of Saturnine or Indigo casting a shadow onto the realm of the Gray, so there's like kind of distorted weird things. Well, there has to be something that the shadow is being cast upon. So there's this flat surface that exists in this realm. And we are living in the illusion on it. And my brother and a bunch of other people have gone so far afield in Shadow that they're taking to live on the other side, the underside of this flat surface. And so they're lost, which we're trying to find them. One of the really cool things about Invisible Sun is that we all get to choose our own character arcs. And there are like 30 different example arcs in the game. And so instead of the GM saying, in this arc, we are going to clear out the keep on the borderlands. During character generation, you come up with things like, oh, I want to be master of magical baking, or I want to create, you know, this beautiful work of art, or I want to find my missing brother, or for example, Bruce Cordell's character was a young goetic, which is a type of like summoner sort of character. And he and a friend of his, a fellow apprentice, accidentally summoned a really powerful demon, killed his friend, and then ran off. So Bruce chose a character arc of righting a wrong, and his sole focus has been tracking down this demon so we can eliminate it and get back to that. But we chose those character arcs for ourselves. And sometimes the GM will throw something at us like, hey, this person has been kidnapped and it relates to you or you slightly or strongly. We all work together, but we also have our own character arcs that are working on either together or independently in sites. Ooh, that's a lot of words. I mentioned our cipher play program. You obviously like to come to conventions and play games with people you don't know. Are any of you involved in like Pathfinder Society to play in a game store? So for Cyberclean Numenera, we do the same thing. That's it's adventures that we create. They're only available in stores. If you like playing a Numenera or you're interested in playing a Numenera, talk to your local game store. I am in charge of our volunteers like Chris. And if your store says we don't have anybody who knows how to play, have them contact me and I'll find somebody in your area to come out and demo the game for it. And hopefully that will lead to somebody being able to run some stuff like that. I brought some fun goodies to share, and then we can talk about questions that you have. We make a lot of decks of cards for utility purposes. Like, hey, I'm having a hard time thinking of what this NPC is. I need an NPC name or I need an NPC trait. So we have the NPC deck, which is just a bunch of details about random NPCs. And you can either like, pick one and say, oh, is this the name or this is the person's appearance, whatever. And just mix and match traits. Just little handy little things that are good for whether you're running an SCG game or we also have things called assets. So the idea of an asset is any sort of tool that makes your character better at a particular sort of task. It might be, could be something as mundane as I have a set of climbing gear to help me climb, or weird springy shoes that help me jump, or it could be a one-use or limited-use object that's a brain implant that lets you be more eloquent when you talk to people. And a lot of times, it's kind of fun just for the GM to say, oh, you find as a bit of treasure this random item. You can just pull an asset from the asset deck. And I also have some of these Cypher and Creature Deck cards from the expansion. You can take a look at that. And I have. So, the scientific organization that was in charge of the time travel for the prediction setting is SATI, S A T I, which is SATI stickers. And we will take them. And. I want to talk about the assets very, very quickly. I think you mentioned this because Chris is in the front row. So in the same way that Pathfinder Society has venture lieutenants and venture captains, MCG has a team of people all over the country and some outside of the U.S. who run games for us at stores and conventions. And in exchange for them doing that, we give them store credit on the MCG shop. And in addition to the normal stuff that we have available at the MCG store, we recently actually added asset team store, which has some limited use items. Like we've got some custom sets of dice that were only available in this one super exclusive Kickstarter, and we have a few sets left over. We have some like deluxe leather hardcover books, some rule books. One thing I've started doing is MCG uses XP cards because instead of Pathfinder or D&D, we're awarding 100 or 1,000 XP, like a good night of role playing and such. Cypher system game, you might end up with 1 to 3 XP, and we just like to keep track of them with individual XP cards. We made some special XP cards just for the asset team, which in this case are using some octopus art from a recent game. We're going to be doing a lot of fun things like that. I think that is enough of me rambling on a bit. Mostly you want your answers to questions. So how about just throw some questions at
the organized play, I got a couple questions about that, don't mind. So you say that going to the store and asking about playing games. So, for example, my area, store owner's not interested in doing any of that stuff. He's interested in having this play there, but him actually getting more involved in that, that's it.
That's the same with us. So for our program, having worked next to people who run D&D's organized play and having worked next to Pathfinder organized play, we wanted to go away from the superstructured environment that PFS has. We don't track like how many magic items you've had and that sort of thing. And we know that different stores are going to have different needs for their particular location. So what we've done with our program is it's free for any store to join. And there's kind of three organizational levels within the program. So there's the store, there's the organizer, who's usually the official person who works for the store and is the event manager for the store. But it could be someone like you who says, hey, I want to run some Numenera events at your store. Can I do that? And they say, sure, reserve a time, and you're the organizer for that event. Yeah. And thirdly, there's the GM. And often the roles might be the same. Like if you're the organizer and you are
I'll be the GM.
You can be the GM too. So we do report, have people report their scenarios, because at the end of the season of Cypher Play, we take all the reports from stores that have run events, and we send out a reward to the store, a reward to the organizer, and a reward to the GM. Store usually gets something like a banner. The GM has gotten, for example, a shot glass, shot glass, just fun stuff like that. And but if you're really interested in seeing new Numenera adventures, we are producing 6 or 7 new adventures every season. And if you're a new Numenera fan, like, you're like, I want to get my hands on these, this is the way to do it. Just show up, make arrangements for the store. And...
Well, so for example, the store would, whatever the minimum for the store that he would need to do, he'd be willing to do that. So what would be that minimum?
The minimum is he needs to message me.
Okay.
And he can either do that by emailing me or going to the site from their website and message me.
Say, hey, we had games here.
He just says, we want to participate in Cypher Play. And it's a free kit. You send him a kit, and there's a packet that says, retailer, this is what you need to know. Organizer, this is what you need to know. GM, this is what you need to know. And then here's a separate packet for each of the 6 scenarios.
For like Pat, for Paizo, he did the minimum, register the store on Paizo webpage.
Yeah, and we list the store. We do 2 cool things, I think, with Cypher Play, because the whole point of our program is to get people into stores playing games and buying stuff, which is you know, what stores want, what they want to buy stuff. So, if you play through an adventure in Cypher Play, you get a copy of that adventure to keep. The idea is go home and run it for your friends. Expand the network of gamers. If you do that, then you get a coupon that's good at that store on MCG stuff. And at the end of the season, the store just says, yeah, we had, you know, 10 people do coupon, but we reimbursed the store. So it costs the store nothing. So it's just free marketing for the store. They get free adventures, people coming in.
Thank you for the information.
You send out packets or something that we can give to the stores that can explain all that?
All the information is on our website.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes trying to get the store people to go to the website is difficult.
You know, actually, I'm going to be writing next week an article about Cypher Play, so I think I will make a mental note to add a PDF explaining that.
That would be very useful. I'm email traffic with it. I just email to him, say, hey, look at this. This is what I like to do at your store.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that. Yes.
So I am familiar with Numenera. I've read through it outside. I really like it. Really interesting. Here's my question. One of the things that I'm not a huge fan of in regards to Pathfinder is that they overlook many rules, whatever they have to track. One of the things I love about it, however, is their adventures are fantastic. And I'm never without something to run. In my life that I'm in, I don't have time or a long time write adventures. I heard you say something about 6 per season, but all of your games, the 3 that you just suggested, all sound fantastic. But what I want to know before I purchase any of them is there continued support for these things that are going to be pre-written adventures that I can then use and not have to spend my time writing it for a friend?
So Numenera has been out for 4 years, and we have several like longer adventures that are basically meant to be a campaign, and we also have several shorter adventures as well. With Cypher Play, we've got altogether season 17, so probably about 21 or so short adventures to go with that. And one thing for Cypher Play is that, which we just started with this season, is all the previous seasons of adventures for Cypher Play are available to stores on the Cypher Play website. So if you go to your store and be like, hey, I want to get some Cypher Play, then you can get connected to all these existing PDFs that you can use in your home game.
That's for doing there.
That's for Numenera.
But moving forward with Predation and Invisible Sun, those sound really awesome.
So for Predation, there are adventures in this, and then a lot of adventure scenes as well. And Shauna is writing an adventure that we're running at Gen Con, and then that will be made available on our store. And it's really one of those things, though, depending on how much interest there is in it. One thing we did for Gods of the Fall, which is our first standalone setting, which came out last year, is we basically have an open license for the Cypher system in the same way that Wizards has the Adventurers League, where anybody can write D&D under this particular license. We have the same thing for the Cypher system, and we just added Gods of the Fall to that. So I'm not sure if we plan to do that for Predation, or if we're going to hold on Predation and do our own stuff for a while, but the nature of the Cypher system is that the systems are so compatible. Like, I've worked on 2nd edition, 3rd edition, and 5th edition D&D, and on Pathfinder. And I can say that any of our games from MCG, whether that's The Strange Human Era or Star System, they are 99% compatible. They are more compatible than any two editions of D&D. Like, we actually have a PDF source book for The Strange that says, hey, if you want to run Numenera as a recursion for The Strange, here's 5 pages of what you should do for doing that. And like, very slightly, it's about mechanics. Mostly, it's about theme. They are just, they're completely compatible.
The idea is just a hack.
Yeah.
That's good.
I would say that The Strange and for Invisible Sun, there's the book that has like, well, 10 different like small recursions.
Yes,
for the
instant adventures.
And there's the one where you drop in and it's basically like no one's there and you can't get out. Sounds like that would be great for Invisible Sun too. So like, there's a lot of overall stuff for what you have on.
Invisible Sun, the game, is a different game system than Cyber System. They're similar enough, like if you play Numenera or The Strange, you'll go, okay, I have pools and I use those to go empower my abilities and some of my damage comes from depleting those pools. They're kind of cipher adjacent, is what we call them. It's a very different, it's the needs of the system, the needs of the setting drove the design in a slightly different way. But there is definitely a course of adventures that Monty has planned for that and additional book. There's this thing called the directed campaign as part of the Kickstarter, which is basically Monty running a campaign for you. Which is really like, here's option A and B for the campaign. Oh, your group chose option A? Okay, well then you have option C and D. But they chose D? Okay, so it's this big web of ongoing information about Invisible Sun campaign. And the books that we're releasing for Invisible Sun tie into events. Like by the time you get to like G, it's like, oh, weird, someone discovered this trove of magical spells that now suddenly Vizslay are all learning. And that happens to coincide with when this new book, Magical Spells, comes out as a product.
Are there something similar to like pre-generated characters? Because I know a number of people just, they don't want to go through the time of an effort of building, they just want to jump in.
Yes.
And start playing.
So we've got at least two different sets of pre-gen characters for Numenera, and one of them for the Numenera starter set, which is like the beginner box, but for Numenera. The Strange has a set of pre-gens. A lot of the complete adventures actually come with a set of pre-gens as well. Gods of the Fall, it's an adventure that we published separately, has some pre-gens in it. We're going to have the same thing for Predation, which is here's a bunch of example characters. We have three example character pre-gens for Cypherplay that anybody can download. The idea of Cypherplay is when you start, that you would sit down and make a character creation for Cypher System is very easy. But some people are just like, I need a character and I want to play. So we have characters that we're going to play.
Now, what is the core mechanic of the Cypher System? A D20 or?
It's a D20 based mechanic. Tasks have a difficulty rating from 0 to 10. And to succeed, you need to roll that number times 3 or higher on a d20. So difficulty 1 task, you need to roll 3. Difficulty 6 task, you need to roll 19. Obviously, there's some things that are past 20 that you can't do under normal circumstances, but you might be trained in a skill which lowers the difficulty by 1. You might have an asset that lowers the difficulty by 1. You might be specialized in a skill that lowers the difficulty by 2. You might have a special ability like if you are a wizardly type character, just so that you can spend a couple of points of your intellect to become fluent in how to interact with a particular machine, and that'll reduce difficulty. So it's possible to get some of those. You would need to roll a 30 level difficulties for a high level character. It's actually in the realm of possibility. Instead of, I assume you're all familiar with Pathfinder.
Right?
Okay. So with Pathfinder and D&D, you have hit points, and you have your armor class, and you have your saving throws, and you have your 6 stats, and there's all these stats that are derived. Cypher System, it's basically just 3 stats. You have a pool of might, a pool of speed, and a pool of intellect. And for physical tasks, like, hey, I'm going to hit this guy, it's just a might roll. And if it's an unmodified might roll, you're trying to hit the difficulty number. But if you're in a situation in a Pathfinder game, like, wow, I need to roll an 18 to hit this boss, this really sucks. Because every round, you're like, I'm trying to get that 18. Nope, I can't. Well, in Cypher System, there's an option where you can spend efforts. Like, you know, I'm going to spend some of my might pool to reduce that to a 15. And at higher levels, you can actually spend some of your might pool to reduce it to like a 12, where you might have an item to reduce it. But it lets you give you more flexibility in your choices. and your might, speed, and intellect are also used to fuel your certain abilities. So instead of power attack, where you take a minus 5 in your attack roll and add a plus 5 to your damage roll, if you're a warrior, you might have an ability called bash, which is like, I'm going to spend 1 point of might, and I'm just going to add extra damage to my attack. And you can get this ability called edge, which says, hey, you know what, because I'm a warrior, and I'm really good at physical stuff, any sort of physical act based on might that I do, I reduce the cost by 1. So bash, instead of costing 1 point, could cost 0 point, which basically means that in Pathfinder terms, you'd be able to use power attack all the time without that penalty. Instead of making saving throws off a different stat, like if something poisons you, I'd say make a might roll. I'd say it's difficulty 5. I'm like, okay, that's a 15. I'm going to spend some of my might to succeed at this roll so I can get poisoned. Reflex save, you're making a speed roll. Making a will save, that's an intellect roll. You take damage. Damage first comes off your might. When you run out of might, it comes off your speed. And when you run out of speed, you're just holding on by pure force of will. All you have left is intellect, which is coming off your might. That's important.
Question? What's the timeline for Unmasked?
So Unmasked is the third one-off setting that we're producing. It's coming out after Gen Con. It's written by Dennis Detwiller, who is one of the authors of Delta Green. Anybody familiar with what Delta Green is? Delta Green is basically a modern, kind of militarized Call of Cthulhu, where you realize, oh, there's stuff going on, we're going to go get some guns, because that's what we need to survive. Yeah, but it's very creepy, still very Call of Cthulhu. But Dennis is our managing editor. He's writing the Unmasked setting. And the premise of Unmasked is you're a kid in the 1980s, and certain kids in your town have suddenly developed this awareness that, hey, that's weird, this pen glows. Do you see that glow? You don't see that glow? That's weird. Oh, and my dad's watch glows. That's weird. And then this old hat I found in the school parking lot, that also glows. What happens if I stick these together and it becomes like this fusion of this thing and becomes a mask? And when you wear this mask, you gain superpowers. Your mask is unique to you, and your superpowers are unique to you. And you kind of have this split personality thing, where there's your normal kid persona and your superhero persona. So there's this weird dichotomy of, I'm really stressed because I don't have a date for the prom. Oh, and there's some sort of weird monster in the woods that's been kidnapping kids. And I can put my mask on and go deal with this monster thing, but I've got homework tonight, and my curfew's at 10. So you got to get home and deal with it. It's dealing with the angst of the kid issues and having like a Molly Ringwald sort of movie, and yet also having the Stranger Things monsters and the parents won't understand, we can't tell them. And it's set in the 80s. You've got to get to the Cold War. That is scheduled to come out in September or October. Access for it come out or Kickstarter? That was already Kickstarter. And so we're just waiting on Dennis to finish writing it. Edited and the art to be published in September or October. We're wrapping up the point to get the playtesting materials ready. Every day we do a status report at MCG because we're all distributed. We all work from home. But we connect to each other through the internet. So we always post our workload. That's like, today I am orange because I'm at a convention. I'm very, very busy. Dennis is always like, I'm red. Still red. Running on masks. Oh my God. The toilets in my house don't work. They're renovating his house, and so basically they've kicked out the family. They're living in the yard while they're getting out. It's crazy. And so like the water shut off, and his son, like, he's 4 years old, he's like, we just taught him to flush the toilets, but now we don't have water, so we're telling him not to flush the toilets. So that's Unmasked. Without the toilets. We can have the element of like, yeah, man, there's...
So, to go on like with him, if our score doesn't want anything to do with them, when they have a real small game score, could the same thing be accomplished with the public library?
So right now, the focus for Cyberplay is that it's about stores and
getting
yeah. We do have, so again, pointing at Chris, because the asset team has adventures that only the asset team has. One of my sheets, one that I wrote, that you ran last night, it's called Cheatwalker. So we have certain adventures that are only there. I'm not sure what... Like, it's something I'm willing to discuss.
How about an online game?
Again, it's kind of diverting from the focus of being out of store. Right. Now, it's something that we have done in the past. The reason is because we do have some seasons that are done that person has asked, can I run last season as a big event at this convention? And we kind of compromised by saying, well, if you could find a retailer who's going to be at that convention, we'll have coupons, but I'm willing to be flexible because we know that some people just aren't in your situation.
But yeah, see, because like for us, my store won't do anything, so I had to go and do literally everything from the Pathfinder Society. The only place I could do it was the library. Even though I started getting people to come in, our store still wanted to deal with it. And so the next available store for us is over 3 hours away that does stuff.
So
yeah,
I know.
Some stores think that they can only make money on D&D or Pathfinder.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's...
Well, even worse, some stores think they can make money on Magic.
And that's their thing. It's just Magic and baseball cards.
But I'll make a mental note, just like the other one. Because if the drive is that stores have the newest season, and the previous seasons aren't like the new hot thing, so we're not worried about like competing with stores, I can see us getting to the point where we'd be able to open that up to gaming clubs and libraries and things like that. Come on, stump me.
So explain the other suns.
So, for Invisible Sun.
Explain what?
The other suns.
Oh, there's, yeah.
So the game is called Invisible Sun because there was a 16th century philosopher, polymath guy who came up with the idea that the essence of truth and spirituality is that there is an invisible sun that shines on every one of us, that kind of is like our guide for, you know, ethics, morality, and emotion, and in connecting to other people. And so Monty took that concept and ran with it, and that in the setting of Invisible Sun, so I'd already mentioned that there is the realm of shadow, which is called the gray. There's also the realm of indigo, which represents truth. There's also the gold, the silver, the green, the blue, the red, and these are all basically links in this chain of connected realms. There's eight of them, and then off kind of off to the side is this invisible. So each of them has a sun. So there's the gray sun, but it's kind of a synonymous for like sun slash world slash plane slash dimension slash realm. So when you're in the gray sun, you're actually in the world of the gray. When you're in the indigo sun, you're in the world of the indigo. And each of those things represents something. Green represents life, blue represents thought and dreams, red represents destruction and anger. And these are all physical places that you can go to. So, and this layer is just so weird. Every character is part of character creation. You interact with the rest of the group in this thing called the first session. So you come to your kind of group and you have your character mostly finished. And you say, this is my Vizlay character, this is the house that I live in. And then you kind of say, okay, it's my turn. Everybody, throw out some suggestions about what's in my neighborhood. Because you live in a city and you have a house. And so it would be like, oh, your house has a neighbor that it's a mortuary. And there's a cranky old, you know, mortician there who, you know, doesn't like Vizlay. So that's kind of a source of plot elements. Like on the other side, you might have a weird bakery where you're kind of suspicious that they might be serving human meat. And so over the course of this first session, everybody has this connectivity for their character. And my house in particular is my character is kind of a trust fund baby. His parents wrote some really popular spells and now they're dead now, but so he's just kind of like living off the profits of that in this big giant house that he doesn't need. So he's got this like 8-bedroom house with this like, you know, cloths over everything. And antisocial. People keep wanting to throw parties at his house. So it's like, oh, we should have a big party at your house. Like, I don't remember. But someone during one of these parties realized that my house was haunted. So he brought in this expert on ghosts, and he's walking around with like a PK meter, saying, oh, I'm getting really weird readings. And we finally realized it's not ghosts. There's a portal to the blue, the realm of blue, in my basement. And so these little fragments of dreams are coming out through this hole in my basement and infesting my house. And I didn't know about them, so they weren't doing anything to me, but now that they've been brought to my attention and I can see them, and they are aware of me, and now they're hostile to me. So, one of our stereoarchs that we are choosing to, that we chose for this, is exploring this part of the realm that connects to my basement, so we can see if I'm closing it. That area of the blue is called the Deeps of Sleep. So we're going to go to the Deeps of Sleep and deal with that. But the Invisible Sun is the source of all magic, and so it just kind of like broadcasts. It is kind of like the spell that created multiverse is still an ongoing thing. It's not like somebody casts a spell and it's done. There's this entity called Vizsla, who is just still the source of magic in all creation. This magic is flowing from her through the realms of the suns in a particular order. That's called the Path of Suns. So you can go from realm to realm using magic. And the weird thing is, when you get to the end, you can actually turn around and go back up the Path of Suns, but everything is all kind of warped. Like how I mentioned the underside of Shadow, all of the realms have an opposite side that way. So like there's blue, which is the realm of thought and dreams, but if you come at it from the opposite direction, it's a realm of nightmares and insanity, that sort of thing. So it's all about like what sort of path you want to take for your character and the externality of this realm reflected within yourself. For example, to get to the realm of the red sun, you can't just be like, oh, I'm casting a spell, ta-da, you know, plane shift. It's really about you have to tune yourself to red, which is about thinking about destroying and anger and rage. You might actually have to like break stuff. And it might have to be something that's really dear to you. Like, oh yeah, this is, you know, the chessboard that my grandfather gave me. And I need to get to the realm of red because there's a demon there who has information that I need. And as part of opening this portal to the red, I have to destroy this thing that means something to me because red is the realm of destruction. So it's about what's inside you reflecting what's outside and vice versa.
So is that the Invisible Sun campaign, or is that
That's Invisible Sun. That's Invisible Sun.
Okay.
But again, you could add elements of that to where, because here's the thing, Invisible Sun is a fictional game world, so you could have a recursion that's Invisible Sun. I mean, you can have a recursion that's Galarian if you wanted to, because it's a fictional world. Or, you know, Middle Earth, or you could go to Hub.
Ghost Squad.
That's right. That's actually another neat thing about Invisible Sun, because one of the suns, the Pale Sun, is the realm of the dead. But it's not like, oh, we're all zombies and necromancers and things like that. It's just like when people die, that's where they go. It's like the afterworld in Greek mythology. You're like, yep, here we are. Yep, I got a farm. You know, I live in a house. I'm dead. And people there are ghosts, and they're just kind of like, yes, here we are, and they're immortal because they're ghosts. They don't have to worry about eating or dying or anything like that. They can still be destroyed, but they're not like, oh, they die in 50 years. But if you go to the Pale Sun, you can go talk to dead people. And sometimes dead people, like, there's a lot of bureaucracy associated with the Pale. But you can actually get a visa if you are a ghost and get permission to come to another realm. And so if your character dies in Invisible Sun, because you're a Vizsla, you're a wizard, you can come back as a ghost almost right away and almost have like a ghost walk sort of campaign. You're like, okay, now I'm a ghost. You go and hunt down the guy who killed me. And then I might either stay as a ghost for a while, or I might actually go to the Pale and just be like, yes, I'm dead. Or I'll talk to my Vizsla friends and say, I need you to take the character arc that learns how to the raise dead spell so that I can come back. And there are spells that are like, oh, if I'm killed, I come back from the dead frequently as a living person. It's a really crazy weird setting. The spells are so descriptive. Like, have you ever played Mystara? Star Sacred? So they have all these long, flowery names for spells in Mystara. It's the same way in Invisible Sun. There's like, they're just so long. Like, there's one spell that I learned, which is you cast it and you and up to four people fall asleep, and then when you wake up an hour later, you've teleported home. And this spell is called, like, The Memories of Home Call Me Back. And, like, it's really weird because when we broke into that Candleflame Palace to steal that kidnapped person back from the bad guy who had him, we're like, okay, everybody hold hands, cast my spell. Like, we've never done this spell before. We actually don't know if we're going to be lying there asleep for an hour in the guy's castle. Or if we fall asleep and then immediately teleport and then wake up an hour later. And because we cast a spell on ourselves, we still don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could have, like, we didn't get killed in our sleep, so presumably we weren't just lying there in his dungeon for an hour on the floor. So they just gave me the 5-minute warning. I would like you all to come up and please take a Saddy sticker or some of these cards. Sometimes flip through predation. If you have any other questions, I'll meet you right here face to face to answer them.
Also, I need candy.
There are two rumors here at PaizoCon. One of them is that Jason Bulma is going to dance at the banquet tonight, and the other one is that I can't.
And then is he going to be drinking enough? chomp
for that.
This is Jason.
right.
How's that even a history?
You did the cover of what, Razor Coast was it?
No, you're thinking Wayne
Reynolds.
Oh, okay.
That's not me. Wayne and I joke that we're brothers from different countries.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.